Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, nearly 200 women of all ages, from teenagers to elders, are gathering this weekend in Sullivan County, New York, for the annual Rural Women's Assembly. The event, organized by the Rural and Migrant Ministry, brings together women from across New York State's communities to foster learning, inspiration, and empowerment. We'll learn more about the assembly next. And the holiday season is here. The Wayne County Emergency Management Team wants everyone to stay safe. We'll speak to Steve Price, Wayne County's Emergency Management Coordinator. North Branch Cider Mill is having a holiday shopping night. And NACL is hosting a winter's table where a remarkable mechanical table will deliver food to guests from the kitchen. We'll learn more after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. That's the sound of the opening bell on the New York Stock Exchange. President-elect Trump rang the bell about half an hour ago to open Wall Street trading. It comes as he's been selected as Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Time Magazine officials say they selected Trump because, for better or worse, he had the most influence on the world and on the news this year. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Labor Department reported a bigger-than-expected jump in wholesale prices last month. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 7 points in early trading.
Wholesale prices in November were up 3% from a year ago. That's the biggest annual increase in 21 months and underscores the message that inflation is not yet fully tamed. Wholesale prices rose 0.4% between October and November. Despite the sticky inflation, the Federal Reserve is expected to lower interest rates when policymakers meet next week. The European Central Bank lowered its benchmark interest rate today in an effort to shore up the continent's weakening economic growth. New applications for unemployment benefits jumped last week. 242,000 people applied for jobless aid. That's up 17,000 from the week before. Some applications may have been delayed by the Thanksgiving holiday. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
An American man has been found in a suburb of the Syrian capital, Damascus. Local residents found him early today wandering barefoot on the streets. NPR's Hadil Al-Shelchi has more.
The American man, who identified himself to reporters as Travis Pete Timmerman, said that he was on a pilgrimage and was detained earlier this year after crossing into Syria on foot from Lebanon. Hungarian police had released a missing persons report for the 29-year-old after he went missing in Budapest after attending church there 7 months ago. Timmerman, who is believed to be from Missouri, claimed he was jailed in Sidnaya prison, one of the most notorious in the country. He was released after opposition forces entered the capital last week and overthrew President Bashar al-Assad. Video circulating of him earlier sparked speculation that he could be missing journalist Austin Tice, who disappeared in Syria 12 years ago. A United States official confirmed the man in the video was not Tice. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Damascus.
In the U.S., fire crews continue to battle the wildfire burning northwest of Los Angeles. The Franklin Fire has forced thousands of people to evacuate the coastal community of Malibu. The fire has scorched more than 6 square miles. It is only 7% contained. Dusty Martin is with Unified Command fighting the Franklin Fire. He says one reason containment is so hard is because of the terrain.
In a lot of the areas out here, is it's extremely steep, rugged terrain that's almost inaccessible.
More than a dozen structures have been damaged or destroyed in the wildfire. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The head of the Federal Aviation Administration is going to step down on January 20th. FAA Administrator Mike Whitaker will leave on Inauguration Day. The news of his departure comes a day after FBI Chief Christopher Wray announced that he, too, would leave his post. The premier of the Canadian province of Ontario is warning of retaliation if President-elect Trump makes good on his threats of tariffs against Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports from Toronto, Premier Doug Ford says Ontario will cut off energy supplies to the U.S.
Trump says he will slap a 25% tariff on all goods coming from Canada and Mexico into the U.S. when he takes office in January. Now, Ontario Premier Doug Ford is fighting back, saying if necessary, he will cut off energy supplies to Michigan, New York State, and Wisconsin. Ford made the threat after a virtual meeting with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and other provincial leaders. The premier says he doesn't want this to happen, but his number one job is to protect people in Ontario and Canadians as a whole. Ford wasn't specific in his threat, saying he'll wait to see what will happen. Canada is considered the main source of energy imports to the U.S. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
The White House says President Biden has commuted sentences of nearly 1,500 people who are in home confinement, and he is pardoning 39 others who were convicted of nonviolent crimes. The White House says this is the largest single-day grant of clemency in modern history. It comes after Biden pardoned his son Hunter, who was convicted on federal tax and gun crimes. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This weekend, nearly 200 women of all ages are gathering in Sullivan County, New York, for the annual Rural Women's Assembly. The event, which brings together women from across New York State's rural communities, fosters learning, inspiration, and empowerment. It's organized by the Rural and Migrant Ministry, and the assembly supports the organization's mission to build a just and equitable rural New York by nurturing leadership and challenging unjust systems and standing in solidarity with marginalized groups, particularly farm workers and rural laborers. Adrian Jensen is the co-organizer of the assembly. She's also the Catskills regional coordinator and co-runs the Youth Economic Group for Rural and Migrant Ministry. She joins us this morning. Good morning, Adrian.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for being here. Can you tell us a bit more about the Rural Women's Assembly and the purpose of that?
The Rural Women's Assembly originated as a way to bring together rural women of all different backgrounds to have a better understanding and then be able to extend that understanding to the greater rural community. A lot of the women who engage in the assembly are so busy working and taking care of business, so to speak, that this often is the only opportunity that they have to gather, learn about, you know, their rights, engage with other women, have some time for relaxation. So it's very important.
And this has been going on for the last 20 years. How has this become like a vital event for rural women and the expectations they have for coming to this?
I think that the women really look forward to it because it is a very vibrant event. You know, there are Know Your Rights workshops that are happening. There are, you know, arts and movement events that are going on. Like this year we're having an Afro-Caribbean workout. We're creating a song for the event because next year we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of this event. There are youth classes, youth meaning high school age to, you know, 20s. We understand that women who are living in rural areas and especially, you know, doing laboring and farm working often have children that they need to make sure are okay. And so, you know, for the young children, we provide childcare as well for that weekend. So they really look forward to it. They look forward, it's a bilingual event, and they look forward to engaging with women who they wouldn't necessarily run up upon, you know, and developing friendships, learning about financial literacy, learning about issues around health, learning about, like I said, social justice issues. So it's there and getting resources. You know, we have a resource fair there as well. So being able to connect with resources is also important. It's a wonderful event.
What are some of the barriers and challenges that rural women face? You know, what are some of the more pressing challenges for rural women today?
You know, I think that especially in New York State, and access to housing and access to fair labor laws or adhering to fair labor laws, childcare, the absence of having childcare and then being able to make a living, you know, the access to transportation, like vital transportation to be able to get to the places that they're laboring. All of these things, you know, should be in access to folks, and it's very difficult. Having clean water, having access to healthy food that is available all year round, not just seasonally.
We mentioned that this assembly attracts women of all ages. So how do these challenges differ between generations of rural women, from teenagers to elders?
You know, that's such a good question, and that's actually the focus of this year's assembly, is creating community and courage, serenity, and wisdom, but throughout the ages. And so this year, the assembly is looking at how all of these things affect folks through the generations. You know, for a person who is older, it might be issues around, you know, financial literacy and not having had the access to retirement funds or you know, even having a bank account and being able to make to save that money. And that's something that the Rural Migrant Ministry is creating, is a credit union to be able to have, for folks to be able to, rural folks to be able to have access to that. You know, for younger, excuse me, for younger folks, it might be the kind of dysphoria that can exist between the community that they're growing up in terms of having to support family and working, and then going to school and whatever it is that they're experiencing in school. So, you know, it affects people differently throughout throughout the ages, and that's something that we're going to have a good time unpacking this weekend.
What are some of the workshops that the attendees can expect to help address these challenges? You mentioned so you're going to be unpacking that. How are the? What are some of the things they can look forward to, or that you guys will be presenting?
We have someone who is doing an Afro-Caribbean workout. We have someone who is doing a workshop that is entitled Courage, Own Your Womanhood, Speak Your Mind, who engages in something called shadow work. We have the Hispanic Federation is doing a workshop called Wisdom, Intergenerational Budgeting Strategies. And the wonderful, marvelous Janice Adams is doing a workshop that's called Serenity, Intergenerational Communities and Belonging.
We know that.
So we you know, have someone that's talking about mushrooms and how mushrooms, different types of mushrooms, and what the beneficial effects of those are on the health. You know, there are things like that, that will be happening. And then the youth will be learning from some of their elders how to do canning. And while they're working on the canning, they're going to have a conversation about intergenerational friendships and what the importance of that is. So there, you know, these are some of the things that will be happening this weekend.
We're talking to Adrienne Jensen, who's co-organizing the Rural Women's Assembly this weekend in Sullivan County, New York. It's organized by Rural and Migrant Ministry, and it brings together nearly 200 women of all ages to gather and talk about learning and inspiration and empowerment. Adrian is also the Catskills Regional Coordinator and co-runs the Youth Economic Group. I want to ask you about the Catskills Regional Coordinator and the Spark Rural Worker Education Center in South Fallsburg in just a sec. But I also just wanted to ask you one more thing about this, the assembly. What impact do you think that this type of a gathering and the empowerment and the things that they're learning to assert rights and get access to the resources that they need? What kind of impact do you think this empowerment has on rural communities as a whole?
You know, Tim, I think that one of the challenges that we have as rural communities are being kind of very isolated, not knowing where to go to get resources to help us in these challenging situations. So sometimes there are a lot of resources that are available, but the challenge is just knowing that they're there. Having that connection with someone, knowing that they're, you know, sometimes just having a face-to-face with a provider makes it such that you feel compelled to be able to reach out to them and ask for assistance. So, you know, especially since traditionally, you know, so it's not the case that this is always the way, but traditionally that women are raising youth, then it's very nice because the things that they're learning, they're able to pass on to their youth and to their families and to their greater community. So as they take on this information, so does the community.
Spark Rural Worker Education Center is in South Fallsburg, as I mentioned, and Spark was actually given the name by members of the Youth Economic Group. What's the reasoning behind that name, and what do you guys do there at the Rural Worker Education Center?
So, you know, the Spark comes from sparking. I actually don't know what the acronym is. I've been trying to find out from some of the alumni youth, but it has to do with sparking change. And it is located in South Fallsburg. To be exact, it's 5277 New York, Route 42 in South Fallsburg. It's at the old St. Andrew's Episcopal Church, and that's their permanent location. But that center is something that's available to the community. It's available to the community to gather, to learn, to question, to learn about social justice, to learn about their rights, about health, to take language classes. Things like that are happening at that center. And also, you know, a lot of arts-oriented things. The Spark Center houses the Bags for Justice and the Rural Economic Group, which is a youth group, and it is centered around cooperative economics and social justice. This next Friday, the Spark Center is having a holiday event where there'll be singing and food and gifts that folks can purchase for school-aged children at a real nominal fee, like, you know, very affordable for anybody. The first 20 families or folks to register have the opportunity to get a turkey. And I just would love to give the telephone number that they can RSVP.
Sure. At. Please.
That's 845-693-1093. And again, that is at the Spark Center. It's next Friday at 5:30 p.m. We'll have singing, we'll have food, you know, gifts, the turkeys, and people can learn a little bit about the center that is, we are looking to have our grand opening in the spring, but it is open now and functioning.
The Spark Center also serves as a gathering place for workers from the food processing plants that dot Sullivan County. And it really is a gathering place for that community that might be overlooked. Do you hope to shed more light on what folks need there and let more folks participate, I guess? And not that they're not able to participate, but it somehow in sometimes is overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. And I think that, you know, the desire as well is to integrate communities, right? So yeah. That there are many marginalized communities within Sullivan County, and together everybody is stronger. You know, everybody is being affected by difficulties economically and being in a rural area. And so as we gather together as community and start to discuss these things, really amazing things happen. And I think that that's really what the spark is about, is having those important conversations and realizing, I'm having that problem too. You know, I'm having that challenge also. Together, you know, let's check into that together and see what we might be able to create to improve our overall lot.
The assembly this weekend, is registration still open? Are you looking for volunteers or sponsors still? How could folks who might want to get involved or support be able to help and contribute?
Folks are definitely able to still come. I would say even if, you know, someone wanted to show up, they could register there for the day. If someone still wants to register for overnight, we may have one or two rooms available. I'm not sure, but they should certainly call, the office or contact the office at, I think it's ruralmigrantministry.org. As far as sponsors, we are always looking for sponsors, because a lot of these women aren't able to afford, accommodations on their own. And so having some, reducing that cost a bit is really helpful. We do have some spaces for vendors still. So if there are any vendors that feel like what they have to offer is applicable, that would be great as well.
Yeah, there's more information at ruralmigrantministry.org. And when we say sponsor, you're talking about sponsoring a young woman or mother to attend the event. For example, $200 sponsors a scholarship for a young woman or mother to attend.
That's right.
I mean, they'll also get like an ad in your journal too, but like you're sponsoring someone to be able to attend this assembly and have this opportunity to gather in sisterhood with others.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, I know that there's a group, for instance, in Delaware, that was ever so kind to donate, I think about $600 to assist some women in Sullivan County to be able to attend. And we actually have some youth as well that will be attending.
That's great. Before we go, how do you envision the assembly growing or evolving to better serve the needs of rural women?
I think that over a period of time, what we are going to see with the assembly going forward is some gatherings that are happening prior to the assembly, so that women can start to engage with each other, women all over the state, right? You know, we have a center that's in West New York. There is a center that's in Long Island, and there is a center that is in the Hudson Valley as well. And so having those connections and workshops and things like that that happen prior to it, so that when they come to the assembly, it's kind of like seeing old friends. It's like a homecoming, you know, an annual homecoming. So that is what I hope to see over a period of time. And I hope to see it grow. And I hope to see president, the assembly, women from all different backgrounds coming together as it was created.
You know, I was looking on the website at ruralmigrantministry.org just to get more information about the assembly, and then I saw the Get Involved tab, and at Rural Migrant Ministry, there are many other ways for folks to get involved. There are job openings, internships, and fellowships. You can volunteer. You're looking for folks to help, you know, even support in offices, to tutors, to photographers and gardeners. So a lot of ways that folks can get involved with the mission of supporting rural New York State and standing with the disenfranchised, especially farm workers and rural workers. Adrian Jensen is with Rural Migrant Ministries and co-organizing the Rural Women's Assembly this weekend. She's also the Catskills Regional Coordinator and runs the Youth Economic Group. Adrian, I know you're a bit under the weather, so thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Have a great gathering this weekend.
Tim, thank you very much. And I also just want to thank you for doing, you're such an amazing reporter, and you just you do such an excellent job of, you know, doing your due diligence and sharing with the community really important things. So I just want to thank you.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you so much. You have a great weekend, and thank you again.
All right. Be well.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, holiday safety tips from the Wayne County Emergency Management folks. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Sullivan Public, inviting the community to their holiday market, December 14th and 15th, 11 to 4, featuring ceramics from Studio Jesse Lazar, alongside a dozen artists and makers, plus food, drinks, and art projects for adults and kids. In Eldred, behind the library, 16 Proctor Road. Merriment shopping and refreshments at Sullivan Public's Holiday Market, December 14th and 15th, 11 to 4. More information on sullivanpublic.com.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
From the online trends that dominated 2024...
On the spectrum of brat to demure, where are you right now?
To spicy TikTok viral reads...
These romance fantasy books about dragons...
And celebrity grievances...
This is just competitive rap stuff.
NPR kept you up to speed on pop culture all year long. Give back to the news source that just hits different by making a donation today. Thanks.
Make your year-end donation today at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, the holiday season is here, and Wayne County Emergency Management wants everyone to stay safe. Steve Price is Wayne County's Emergency Management Coordinator, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Well, thank you for being here. You know, earlier in the week, we spoke to the folks at Ulster County, and we specifically focused on home fires. And are you seeing, or do you see also an increase in just, you know, these types of events happening during this time of year?
Yes, during the holiday year season, we do see an increase in home fires.
And what are some of the ways that folks can prevent that? You know, one of the things we talk about are trees, really. That's a place where some of those fires catch easily if the needles are dry.
Oh, absolutely. If you choose to have a live tree, you know, within your home, keep it watered, keep it away from any kind of open flame or anything that produces heat. You know, we suggest at least like 10 feet away from anything within the residence that may produce heat. And as it dries out, you know, as the days go on and the holiday season ends, comes and goes, remove the tree as your earliest convenience and get it out of your residence and send it out for disposal.
What about holiday lights? What should folks look for there?
Anything when you're stringing your lights, whether it be around your home or on the tree itself, look for any kind of frayed wires or broken bulbs or anything like that that may be create an unsafe issue when they're in use.
And, you know, it probably goes without saying, but these kinds of things still happen. As we said, December, the leading month for these holiday home fires. Candles, you know, lit candles, what's the guidance there in terms of where candles should be and how long they should be on, so to speak?
Yeah, candles should never be left unattended, especially with, you know, live, real flame. The artificial candles are great, that are battery-operated or solar-operated, but if you choose to use a real candle for that you know, texture, that scent. We suggest you keep at least 12 inches away from anything that could burn. And again, do not leave them unattended or in an area where a pet could knock them off of a table or counter, or a child to get it near it.
And speaking of children, what are some other tips for folks specific to children? I mean, keeping those candles out of reach and other things out of reach, right?
Yes, be careful, you know, with the holiday season, the excitement of, you know, presents and new toys and things of that nature. Younger children, obviously, you want to watch for smaller parts with, you know, any kind of a present that they may receive, wrapping paper, the tape, the canisters that, you know, products come in. Just make sure that's all picked up and, you know, away from the young ones.
And this is probably a good time of year to, you know, check smoke alarms, review your fire escape plan with your family members and guests.
Absolutely. At minimum, you should be checking your fire alarm, your CO alarm, your smoke detectors. You should be checking them when we set the time change occurs. You know, twice a year they should be checked, what, and the batteries changed in them. But any time coming into the holiday season, it's a good time to also look at them and make sure the batteries are good and everything's in operational order.
And I mentioned a fire escape plan. Folks should have an idea of, like, where to go, what to do, right? Are there places or tips that you can offer folks in order to help create something like that if they don't have that?
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of handouts and brochures and different things that we could provide to anybody that would need it. They could call our office, we'd get it out to the mail, or they could swing by our office and pick them up. And short of that, I mean, if you go onto the Commonwealth's ReadyPA.gov site, a lot of information is on there. There's templates for plans that they could create for, you know, evacuations of their homes, where they're going to meet when they do evacuate. There's a lot of wealth of information on that website that the Commonwealth provides.
And it's not just for the holidays, right? You, of course, want folks to stay safe and happy during the holidays, but there's a lot of other things that you can get there. Again, it's at the readypa.gov. Are there other things that you want folks to be aware of when it comes to holiday? I mean, we talk about fire in the house because of candles and decorations, trees, lights, but what about, you know, winter weather or travel?
Absolutely. For travel, the Commonwealth also provides a website as well. You can go on. It's interactive. A lot of information on it for routes and what roads may be closed or delayed. It's the 511PA.com. You could access the Commonwealth traffic cameras if you, whatever route you're traveling. You could see the roads, you know, if there's traffic being impacted. There's a lot of advisories that happen on there. Any kind of restrictions that may occur with travel, such as bans for larger vehicles or, you know, when it's safe to be on the roadways, it's all on that site. It's like a comprehensive one-stop shop to get that information. You can get it on, you know, download it on your phone, get access from a computer, but it's a very good site to be able to get that information. And also, we just want people, when you are traveling, throw together a little kit to keep in your car in case that issue comes up where you may break down or a flat tire and your spare may not have the correct air pressure in it and you're stranded there for a bit waiting. You know, get some water, some non-perishable food. First aid kit is great to have in the vehicle. A flashlight with extra batteries. A sleeping bag or some sort of blanket, you know, wrapped up in a bag in the trunk is always good to have as well. Just basic stuff that you may need just to sustain until help gets to you.
Yeah, it's always good to stay prepared, especially when you're traveling around in winter. And, you know, we know disasters and emergency can't ever be predicted with 100% accuracy, but there's a pretty good idea, according to the Pennsylvania Emergency Management folks there, that what the top most likely emergencies are to occur in the Commonwealth. And number one is flooding. Flooding can happen anywhere, of course. And we've seen in the last 24 hours, those banks rising due to the precipitation that we got. What are some flood safety tips that folks should be aware of?
Yes, flood is a very common one that does occur. We were fortunate this time with the river banks and the streams being able to handle all that without cresting and creating major flooding issues. But if you're faced with a flooding issue, you know, sandbags around your residence, just know your surroundings. Know if there's certain areas that do always accumulate water and get flooded with a certain amount of rain. And that's great to know if you have to evacuate your home or your leaving even just for normal travel. If you know an area floods, you're going to have to readjust your route to get around.
Yeah, and it's important to talk to family and friends about what you would do in a flood emergency, too. Just like we spoke about the fire escape, you should know what you would need to do if you needed to evacuate, especially if you live near a floodplain or a stream or a river.
Absolutely, and you could include that right in your family emergency plan when you put that together for, you know, evacuating your house in case of a fire. You could add flooding in there, but that plan would be good to have for any type of emergency that may occur that you find yourself being displaced or evacuated from your residence.
Yeah, and I noticed also on the ReadyPA website, a thing you can do to stay prepared is if you have an attic, to put an axe up there. That is a lesser known tip, I guess, but that's helpful.
Yes, that came about from Hurricane Katrina. What happens if someone is fast raising flood waters and you're trapped in your home and you're going up, obviously, to the highest point you can? You get up in your attic. Attics really don't have an egress out of it. Might have a little vent window or something of that nature, but once you get up in that attic and it's a true attic, you really don't have a way to get out. So one of the suggestions is keep an axe or some type of tool up there that you could either get through the roof or through the soffit or a vent to get yourself out up onto a roof area. Because in Hurricane Katrina, there's a lot of people that were rescued and found on their roofs with their first, second floors were underwater. And the only thing that was visible was their roof.
Yeah, and other things to remember during flooding, turn around, don't drown. Never drive around barricades. Pay attention to forecasts, of course, and check real-time road conditions at 511PA.com. Another thing, too, is to stay in your car as well if you see rising water or also even like down power lines. We had an unfortunate event here in Sullivan County during the last storm where the power lines went down. Someone got out of the car, were electrocuted, and unfortunately passed away.
Yes, absolutely. If there's down power lines or you find yourself in that situation where there's a power line that may be across your vehicle, you don't know if that's energized or not. Stay in your vehicle. Your vehicle will be grounded due to the tires. Do not get out because once you get out, you complete that circuit and, you know, potentially you could be electrocuted. So stay in your vehicle. 911, the rescuers will get to you, and they even rely on the power providers to tell them whether it's live or not live or what the situation is that we're dealing with.
Pennsylvania, as we said, has like the top three things they can be aware of about the disasters. Flood, number one, fire, as we mentioned, is number two. Number three, winter storms, which the National Weather Service calls quote-unquote deceptive killers. That's because most threats are indirectly related to the storms. And as we've seen, these storms can come on pretty suddenly. Like we've seen quite a change in the last 24 hours here, and there's probably more to come.
Yes, there's a prime example from, you know, started off and, you know, with mild temperatures, you know, for this time of the year, and it was nice. Everybody's out at lunchtime from work taking a walk and, you know, after work, but it changed rapidly. We had a huge temperature drop in a very short time. The rain turned to snow, sleet, and then over the course of the evening, overnight, we had flash freezing. All that precipitation and that rain that was on the ground froze.
Yeah, and then
it'd be extreme.
Yeah, and then previously, I can't remember, it was maybe earlier this week, there were these snow squalls that kind of popped up, and, you know, those are serious. Like, they really limit your visibility.
Yes, when you're traveling, we've seen, unfortunately, in the past few years of recent, we've seen a lot of what we call pileups on a major interstate or turnpike or, you know, something, a roadway of that nature, where a lot of vehicles end up in it because a snow squall pops up. You're going along and everything's fine, and then next thing you know, you find yourself in whiteout conditions where you cannot see.
Yeah, and it's a good tip also is to have at least two ways to get weather alerts. So you may have signed up, you know, on your weather app, but it's good to have another backup way to get weather alerts during the winter.
Yes, if you have an app that you utilize, that's great, and also that 511, and then Pennsylvania also carries what they call Alert PA. That's another source, a way to get information on weather and events.
Steve Price is Wayne County's Emergency Management Coordinator, and we can't emphasize it enough. We want everyone to stay safe this holiday season. So, Steve, thank you for joining us this morning with those tips and reminders. And we know you and your team are going to be working 24/7 throughout the holidays, so we appreciate all that you're doing to keep folks safe as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and we wish everybody a happy and safe holiday season. And if anybody needs any kind of information or any help with the planning of their emergency plan, they could reach out to us. All of our information is online.
All right. Steve Price from Wayne County's Emergency Management. Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, the North Branch Cider Mill getting festive. We'll learn a little bit more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Peter McIndoe started a fake political movement called Birds Aren't Real. Birds, he claimed, are actually government drones. This Gen Z parody of a conspiracy theory got millions of followers.
Yeah, maybe comedy can be helpful with coping and processing.
Shock value. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Hi there. This is Brian, host of The Secret Show. Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop. Some new music and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, the North Branch Cider Mill is a historic cider mill in North Branch, New York. It had been abandoned but got new life from the folks behind Homestead. That's Tom Roberts and his wife, Anna. And they're planning a special holiday shopping event coming up. And Tom's joining us on the phone right now. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to remind folks about the North Branch Cider Mill. It's such a historic place. It's been around forever, for a long, long time. But it had been abandoned for a little while. When did you guys, get possession of it? And also the story of how you were able to become the new owners is interesting, too. Can you tell folks about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it wasn't easy. but the place had been open from 1942 until 1999, and then it closed its doors. And I guess my wife and I, like lots of people in the area, just been driving past it constantly and just fell in love with it. And the more we learned about the history of the place, the more we were completely enchanted. And we just were kind of slowly seeing the place fall into ruin, really. And then we figured, well, maybe we should do something about that. And the more we thought about it, the more it just made sense. But that was the easy part. The hard part was then getting our hands on it. We tracked down the previous owner, Dan Sullivan, who was he's a very good person, an intimidating person to reach out to, I would say. But we drove down to his house, knocked on his door, and the long story short is I pestered him for 18 months. he lives about an hour away, and I would drive down to his house every 2 weeks probably for about a year and a half until he agreed to sell the place to us. And that was about 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago to the day, actually, that we bought the place. And then, we put a lot of time and effort into restoring it, and that work is still ongoing. But we did manage to reopen at least part of it. The kind of country store part, we've reopened, and that opened just over a year ago. And we're constantly chipping away at it. And it's our ambition to kind of bring back all the pieces that were there that people love and add a little bit of flavor of our own. And a lot of that is bringing this feel of a traditional country store and bringing all of the warmth and coziness that you would expect to come with that. So, I mean, December is one of our favorite months to be running that place because, you know, we really, we dress it up really nicely. We light all the candles. We have a wood-burning cook stove going. It's It's a really special place for the holidays.
I mean, if you were to look up rural Christmas charm in the dictionary, it would be a picture of the North Branch Cider Mill. It is picture postcard. Is that what appealed to you? What, you know, had you driving around to his house for so long? What about it spoke to you?
Well, it's a bit of that for sure. And, you know, obviously, I mean, I didn't grow up here. I grew up in England and my wife grew up in Sweden. And so I think a building reminded us a little bit of the places that we used to go as kids, and that these old kind of Victorian style shops and places you would go. And it just, it had that feel to it. And then the more we kind of dug into the history of the place, we realized that, you know, I guess there was one. It was the Eberts that started that mill, and they're still here to this day in the area, and they visited a few times. But then it was a British couple, Adam and Joanne Gifford, who bought the place in 1973, and they are the ones that really kind of expanded it and built a lot of the things that people love about that place today. So it felt, it wasn't just random. I was like, oh, this is why it reminds me a little bit of my childhood, because it was actually... It was a British place, British couple that kind of did a lot of the work there. So yeah, there were lots of little coincidences that happened along the way that just made all of this just feel right.
You guys have been busy renovating and transforming the place, and you have a new event that you're debuting, a holiday shopping night. Tell folks about that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're calling it a holiday shopping night. It's really, it's an opportunity for us to really show the place off and light all of the candles, dim the lights, get the wood-burning cook stove fired up, and we'll be serving up some hot apple cider, and we have some Swedish glögg to try. Well, I won't give too much away. It's delicious, but you have to come and try some. And then I'm going to be baking some English mince pies tonight. My wife, Anna, has been baking some Swedish treats, and then we'll have ginger cookies and... I mean, we're just going to be kind of handing out drinks and little bites to eat. And, you know, if people want to shop, great. If people just want to hang out and catch up with friends and bring people along, that's wonderful as well. We're so happy to see the place kind of looking its best for the season. And we want other people to come and see that and then catch up with friends and see this place alive again. My understanding is that, you know, it was a bit of a hub for this community for a long time. And, you know, this is just another little thing to try and bring a bit of that back.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have a lot of great memories there. So what day can we come and get our glögg?
Oh, well, so the event itself is happening tomorrow, Friday the 13th. Hopefully not unlucky for us. but Friday the 13th from 4 until 7. But we're open beyond those hours. And just as a reminder, when we're open 5 days a week, but actually next week we're going to be open every day. So Monday to Friday from 11 to 5. And then on the weekends, we're open 10 to 5. And then we're open Monday, Tuesday before Christmas as well. But yeah, the event specifically is tomorrow from 4 until 7 p.m. And we thought we'd wait until the sun's going down a little bit, so everything gets all cozy and magical in there.
And there's more information at North Branch Cider Mill on Instagram. And on the Instagram, I noticed a comment from someone saying, "This is the most Christmassy, magically place I've ever been." So, as I said, it is definitely that Christmas picture postcard feel there at the North Branch Cider Mill. Thank you, Tom Roberts, for joining us today and for bringing this piece of history back to life in the community.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks for featuring us.
And happy Christmas, I guess, is the proper way to say it, correct?
Yes, happy Christmas, I guess. Yeah, let's go Victorian, for sure.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, NACL's Winter's Table, featuring a remarkable mechanical table delivering foods directly to you from the kitchen. We'll learn more about it after this break. It's Radio Chatskill.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour for real conversations that matter. Every Sunday evening at 6, starting January 5th on Radio Catskill.
I'm Matt Hurtado. Join me on a journey where pixels meet melodies and controllers become conductors. This is Virtual Soundscapes, the show that transports you to the sonic realms of video game magic. In this journey, we'll uncover the hidden treasures of video game soundtracks from the classics to modern day, and speak with industry veterans. Join me every Thursday night at 10 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, NACL is featuring Winter's Table on Friday. It's a gathering of food and drink and making merry, and it features a remarkable mechanical table. It will deliver food to guests from the kitchen of Henning Nordanger. And here to tell us more about that is NACL's Brett Kaiser, and also one of the co-creators of this remarkable mechanical table, Joanne Brinkerhoff, who with her husband Dan Brinkerhoff form the Poison Love Duo. Hello, guys.
Hello, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
All right. This remarkable mechanical table. All I can think about is like people sitting with their mouth open at the edge of a table and food comes around. How does this work? Joanne, do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, well, I'm only the co-creator in spirit.
It's all Dan.
I'm the woman behind Dan.
We should note that Dan could not be here because...
because our pet pig had to make a trip to the vet this morning to get her shots.
And it's the vet, right? That's where the pig is going. Good to know. I hope the pig is okay. So tell us what Dan has created here.
So Dan has been... very focused over the last several years, ever since COVID, I guess, with the idea of dining, community dining. People are so alienated, and we realized that so much during COVID. So, and Dan has always been involved in food and some sort. If you remember years ago, he had this popping popcorn machine that was powered by bicycle and then by a rocking chair and... now it's another version. But during COVID, Dan created a community dining space in an old UPS truck that he converted into separate segments with plexiglass in between so that people can dine together. So anyway, he came up with the idea of having this community dining table where people would be part of the experience so that they wouldn't necessarily have to sit and be served, but they would actually be part of the serving process, which eliminates a lot of the need for waiters and wait staff and servers and so on. So the food basically goes onto this Lazy Susan. And the idea is that it would be small plates so that the experience lasts for quite a long time. So these plates would be put on the Lazy Susan, and then it travels down a track to the people, and it stops at certain intervals, and people on either side of the Lazy Susan would have to partake of the dishes. So it kind of makes you very aware of the other people. You have to, you know, turn the Lazy Susan so that other people can take and so that you won't hog a plate. I don't mean to use the word hog, especially that we have a pet pig.
With the sensitivity of the ill pig.
Yes.
You know what this reminds me of? One of my favorite movies growing up was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
And you know Dick Van Dyke's character, Caractacus, I think, Potts, Mr. Potts?
Yes,
and the
yes.
inventions and all of the things. Like, I think one of them was like where food was actually delivered into the kitchen, like teapots or tea even. I'll have to go back and look at it. But it reminds me of that. And it also reminds me of all the great fun community stuff that NACL does throughout the year. Brett, what's special also about this is not only the mechanical table, but the food that's being prepared, as I mentioned, is from Henning Nordanger, who folks know from Henning's Local, which was a revered eatery here, and Henning closed that up recently, and so it'll be a chance to reconnect there.
That's correct. Yes, we wanted to give people a little chance to get a little Henning's fix since he left the big hole where he used to be over in Coshecton Center. I should say he is currently chef of a restaurant called Julia's Local in Round Top, New York, in Greene County. And we're very thankful to them for allowing Henning to provide this food for us. And in fact, I'm going up there today to get the food to bring it back. And as Joanne mentioned, the idea is that people are partaking this and that the food should take a long time. So part of the experience is the anticipation of what's the next course going to be. So it's a series of small bites from Henning's, you know, sort of Scandinavian tinged cuisine. So it's like a smorgasbord, but not in the sense that we know the word in America, which is like a feast where you just pig out.
The pig is top of mind. We worry. What's the pig's name?
The pig's name is Helen.
We're worried about Helen.
Helen, yeah. Yes.
Helen, we're sending you all good vibes and good energy.
Good vibes, Helen. So there will be many small bites in sequence that come out through the evening. And we should say that it doesn't obliterate the need for service staff, because it is a mechanical table and it is powered. It is human powered. So someone is cranking. So the NACL staff will be cranking that table along and putting the plates up on the Lazy Susan.
And they mentioned there's going to be some merriment and song. The Poison Love Duo will be performing, I assume?
Yes, we'll be performing, Dan and I, along with we have a guest drummer joining us, Dave Keener. So this should be.
We know Dave.
Yeah. Dave's great. And we're happy to be there and partake. I just wanted to make one note about it. As opposed to fast food, this is slow food.
Yeah.
To be savored and experienced over a long period.
And that's part of
time.
The meaning of this event, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about sitting down and just eating, and being done, but it's about having the meal spread out over a long period of time, engaging in conversation.
Very much in the spirit of NACL and the not only community theater, but the communal gatherings that you have throughout the year, too. Where can folks get ticket information and more information about the event?
Yeah, you can find information and tickets at NACL.org. That's our website. There are still tickets left, but they've been going fast in the last couple of days. So if you want to come.
And the weather should be good.
And is it indoors or out?
It's indoors.
Okay, so
you never know at NACL.
Well, I had to ask.
Yes,
you never know
this is
you're
indoors,
do.
And for those who haven't been there for a while, we do have heat in the building now, so it'll be a pleasurable
These are
experience.
Pluses. I will also note that there is no pork on the menu.
Actually, I have to. There is a change to the menu. Uh-oh. I wasn't going to mention it, but since you brought it up, it's the rillettes or the rillettes
are not duck.
They're not duck. They are pork.
All right, Helen, close your ears, Helen. Close your ears.
They have to pull out of this event.
All right, it is NACL's Winter's Table. It is happening tomorrow from 7 to 9 at NACL in Highland Lake. A great gathering of food, drink, song, and that remarkable mechanical table built by artist and inventor Dan Brinkerhoff, and he, along with Joanne Wasserman Brinkerhoff, are the Poison Love Duo, and they'll be performing. Thank you guys so much for coming in. Have a great event.
Thank you, Tim.
Please send my best wishes to Helen.
I will. I'll keep you updated.
Please. We'll have updates throughout the weekend. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania for one small step.
I see an entire population that's kind of lost the ability to communicate. Basically, no ability to compromise, no ability to see the other side of an issue. And I just find it hard to sit there and watch the way things are going sometimes.
There's still time for you to join the conversation. Go to WJFFradio.org and click on the One Small Step logo to sign up. One Small Step is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Now is the time to support Radio Catskill and take advantage of the 2024 tax benefits.
If you're taking a required minimum distribution, or RMD, from your retirement account, sending a charitable donation directly from your financial institution may provide you with a tax advantage.
Consult your financial advisor about including Radio Catskill in your end-of-the-year giving today.
And find more ways to donate at WJFFradio.org.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, flurries, then partly sunny, windy, lots colder, as you know, high 30, tonight's low 16, tomorrow 26, sunny, but still cold. It's 11 o'clock.